Yeah, well, what I like about it is it's able to journalistically put communication lines into a clear information provision of fact data.
I have read it. I definitely have read it.
Makes me feel immensely depressed.
I like the column written by that woman who's the drug addict.
I try not to be awake on a Sunday, so I never see it.
I think if God had meant us to read newspapers, he'd have given us newspapers in our eyes so we could read them all the time. They'd just be there, in your eyes.
Contents page. This week in your all-new format Sunday format.
Wrapped in policy.
27 easy-to-handle separate sections for the most comprehensive in-depth guide to culture ever. Profility.
Britain's three foremost profile writers in the field of celebrity profiling. Award-winning Emma Charles, prize-winning Gawain Dexter, and accolade-gathering, many times runner-up in award ceremonies, Trevor Okumwe, join the award-winning Sunday format to bring you the most comprehensive, in-depth coverage of people imaginable.
Column Inches, our new, easy-to-pull-out supplement exclusively devoted just to columnists, with unique full-length colour photographs of all the columnists. Bigger photos than in any other paper.
Perfect day.
Actress, author, mother, businesswoman, woman, Jilly Davies.
I'm hard at work long before I wake up. I've learnt to dream constructively, so by the time I begin cooking a full English breakfast for the whole family, I've already solved many of my company's creative problems. We all sit together and exchange good-humoured banter, because the time between breakfast and school run is always the most relaxed of the day. The time to bond with Derek, listen to Bach and bake bread with the kids.
Plus, in the Sunday format this week...
The Deep Stuff.
Our new supplement devoted to really deep, comprehensive coverage of everything not covered in...
Cruciality.
Cruciality, our new up-to-the-minute weekly guide to everything that is absolutely crucial in Britain today and why.
Visuality.
Our new up-to-the-minute weekly guide to everything that is absolutely crucial in Britain today in the field of theatre, art and cinema and why.
Literality.
Our new up-to-the-minute weekly guide to everything that is absolutely crucial in Britain today in the field of books and why.
Gastronomy.
Our new up-to-the-minute weekly guide to everything that is absolutely crucial in Britain today in the field of food and why.
If I have a lead role in a movie, which I always do, I'll have my business meetings on the phone on the way to the studio. I merge or asset strip a couple of small companies before walking on set.
Picture, top left.
Between takes, I'm hard at work either rewriting this movie or doing the final touches to my next play. I dictate the dialogue whilst working out, then hear it read back during my massage. It always sounds much better than I thought it would.
Web browser.
Top 5 sites this week on the net.
1.
A new site for lovers of Morse code.
www.... .com.
2.
A French teenager's homepage.
www.l'homme avec le nom Tom qui habite dans le Somme et qui aime le CD-ROM.com.
3.
Scrabble lovers can now pit their wits in cyberspace at
www.xz://aijku:50pointbonus for using all of your 7 letters in one go. .com.
4.
The Stammerers Society of Great Britain go online.
www.co.uk.
Lunch is always at Langham's and lasts for hours. I never bother with diets and order the richest thing on the menu. My book, Eat Yourself Slim, is published tomorrow. I'm either with friends, Derek, or one of the charities I patronise. In the afternoon, I drop by my youngest nursery school and help out, playing games with the kids.
Picture top right.
Organising the next jumble sale. Being a school governor with all my children's 3 schools keeps me in touch. Every parent should be a school governor. In the evenings, I cook a fabulous meal from food we grow ourselves.
Holidays. How to avoid holiday boredom.
Beach balls. Choose the right beach ball. Don't automatically go for the old-fashioned round shape. It's dated, and all women find the shape offensive. Square, elliptical. These days, there are so many to choose from. We're talking balls.
There are some wonderful homemade Italian balls available from Tony's Beach Ball Bar on Old Compton Street. He'll probably bark at you in Italian, but his beach balls are the best this side of Old Compton Street. He'll blow them up personally while you watch.
Habitat are doing their own retro version. And if space saving's an issue, go for the IKEA flat pack. Dixon's Techno 2000 bounces on its own 40 times a minute and provides free net access. Students can buy the Scholar Bounce at Woolworths for just 99 pence.
I never use cookbooks. I prefer to create my own recipes, soon to be published by Faber. We almost always have people round. Our home is an open house. A lot of people think I must have lots of help, but in fact I love cleaning and ironing and wouldn't dream of letting anyone else put up a shelf. My DIY manual is in its 3rd edition. At around 9 most nights we have our own little concert.
I usually start with something light on the violin, accompanied by Derek on the piano, and the kids all play a little something they've composed that day.
Subtexts.
10 things you should do by the time you're 30, or else the rest of your life isn't worth living.
Date a pop star.
Publish a novel.
Direct an East End gangster movie.
Write for a Sunday newspaper.
Become a dot-com millionaire.
Buy a house in Hampstead, Crouch End or Clapham.
Have 3 children.
Buy a pasta-making machine.
Get married.
Get divorced.
Complete a second master's degree.
Cycle through the Himalayas for
Get
charity.
Get your own pilot's license.
Invent a board game.
Become an expert on the history of
Read
jazz.
Bruce.
Become an aid worker in a troubled third
Have
world
dinner
country.
With a world
Take
leader.
A charge card at Harvey Nicks.
Lose weight.
We end with an improvised ensemble piece or one of my own compositions. Sheet music available at Boosie and Hawks. After reading the kids one of my own Andy the Anteater stories, now a pop-up book, Derek and I go to the opening of some new nightclub in town. You're never too old to bop.
Picture bottom left.
We jog back at 4 a.m. and chill for an hour or two before bed. I'm a fast reader and read a whole novel before having fantastic sex with Derek, who, after 20 years of marriage, is still a 5 times a night man. I always have a full 9 hours sleep and wake up incredibly refreshed.
Literality.
No mean writer. Bryony Elsmere finally meets her first literary hero.
Ian McMorton is late, very late for the interview that has taken months to set up. Long before he walks into the foyer of the Belle Maison in Leeds, I'm on first-name terms with all the staff. Admittedly, they wear little name tags on their lapels, but that is not the point. I have charged 3 meals to expenses and eaten bits of 2 of them, leaving lunch completely untouched as a statement. Waiting for McMorton is worth it. The brutally honest poet of the rave generation has been a hero of mine, I have to admit, since I first read his explosive chronicle of the chemical generation, Mugging for Drugs, a brutally explosive chronicle of the acid generation, under the bedclothes in my convent school in 1993.
Sisters of Mersey. 2 women, both of whom have sisters, talk about their different experiences growing up on either side of the River Mersey. This week, Rachel Martin from Lime Street and Molly Travis from Birkenhead.
I am, of course, worried that a literary hero, the object of my earliest adolescent sexual fantasies, will be a big disappointment in the flesh, but it's a chance you have to take, I guess, that your heroes might have feet of clay.
Picture top right.
Suddenly, there is a commotion in the foyer. The staff are trying to throw 2 men out of the hotel. It is McMorton and his minder, a small bony man called Stoat. I vouch for them and yell that the man is a literary genius and that I've been waiting all day to interview him. After some negotiation, we are allowed into the bar. Stoat disappears into the gents and McMorton threatens the waiter who comes to take his order for staring at him.
The Infinancial, the Sunday format's new money section.
According to the latest research, researchers lately have established a link between the buoyancy of the United States financial markets and the increasing consumption of serotonin-specific reuptake inhibitors, SSRIs, such as Prozac, Paxil, Zoloft, Yeehaw, Yay, Woohoo and Hot Dang.
It's a curious self-perpetuating phenomenon,
says Stephanie Skropnich, a world expert in the increasingly important field of stock market psychodynamics at the soon-to-be-better-known-than-it-is-at-the-moment Wall Street Clinic.
His apology to me is characteristically direct and full of no-nonsense, plain-speaking, take-it-or-leave-it honesty, born of his tough, underprivileged upbringing in a neglected housing estate on such an outer fringe of Glasgow that it's actually in Edinburgh, a place called Dundee.
I'm not going to apologise for being late. You may have been kept waiting in a swanky hotel bar for a few hours, but do you really think that's anything compared to the hundreds of years of oppression that you English have handed out to the Scots for hundreds of years?
There's nothing I can say. I know he is right, and timidly ask if I can buy him a drink. He tells me to get him a lager and orders a large whiskey from the waiter.
I got detained in the pub, owing to circumstances beyond my control.
He swigs his lager.
And I don't want to see anything in your article of that patronising English journalist stereotype crap about belligerent drunken Scottish writers. We're suffering under the dehumanising influence of hundreds of years of English oppression.
Over the loud belch that follows, I ask him about his new collection of short stories, The Electric Soup Kitchen.
They're all interconnected. Different facets of the central character are explored in the collection. He's a tragic character, dehumanized, brutalised by the effect of hundreds of years of colonial oppression at the hands of the English. He can't be himself. He can't be free. His cultural contexts are alienating constructs imposed by a foreign power that deny him existential authenticity.
He reads verbatim from the publisher's press release.
Television.
The week ahead, ahead. In full, on television, in brief.
Jerry Springer's Gladiators.
ITV Tuesday, 11:30pm to 12:30pm.
Talk show where guests reveal shocking secrets about their lives before settling any disputes that arise in a gladiatorial-style fight. Nice idea, but it really is very violent. I must admit, even this jaded hack was shocked to see a transsexual bite a fat woman's ear off.
Jerry Springer's Talk Show Talk Show.
ITV Wednesday, 11:30 to 12:30.
New series. Talk show host Jerry Springer invites other talk show hosts to talk about their talk shows. Only what these talk show hosts don't know is that they're about to meet their arch talk show rivals. Fighting it out tonight are Vanessa Feltz and Tricia. Nice format, but frankly it's not violent enough. Either the celebrity guests are being treated with too much reverence, or this show needs a little more time to bed down.
Five seasons.
Summer.
Autumn.
Winter.
Spring.
I was writing about the rave generation long before Irvine Welsh. 15 years before, minimum.
Before the rave generation existed, I ask.
Aye, I saw it in a vision. He may have sold more books than me, but I could punch his light sheet any time. In fact, I did earlier. Or was it someone who looked like him? He has a whiskey.
I do. And within minutes of trying to grab my breasts, McMorton has fallen asleep on my shoulder. I extricate myself, settle the tab, and on the train home feel elated that some heroes did not have feet of clay after all.
Jerry Springer's Peace Negotiations.
ITV Thursday, 10:30pm to 11pm.
This week, Yasser Arafat and Benjamin Netanyahu are the guests on this edition entitled There's Something I Haven't Told You About the West Bank. Surprisingly highbrow for ITV. Despite the melodramatic presentation, Springer does allow some serious views to be aired. And this reviewer found Jerry's final thought surprisingly poignant.
Go, Jerry, go, Jerry, go.
ITV Friday, 8pm till 9pm.
Some Springer represents the worst of tabloid TV. These people are missing the point. He is, in fact, parodying the genre. His latest self-reflective outing shows the master at his postmodern best. You can just imagine Umberto Eco curling up on the sofa with a box of chocks to watch this glorious slice of hyper-reality.
Contemporaneities.
Magical musical tour.
Simon Rayburn decided to venture further east than even the Barbican in search of fine classical music.
It was billed in the back pages of the London Review of Books as a Bach tour of Leipzig and Weimar. I pictured a sojourn of euphonious delight, some cantatas, a passion or two, surely guaranteeing some impressive anecdotes which would enrich my repertoire of small talk for the long summer of cocktail soirees at Glyndebourne and Chichester. Perhaps Bach to the source should have been enough to warn me off. However, switching on Radio 3 later that morning, as I did, to find a rare recording of the Toccato and Fugue immediately imminent, I considered it a coincidence of such pregnant serendipity that in a moment of impetuous adventure I booked the tour there and then. When I say there and then, I mean, of course, as soon as the broadcast had concluded. My spirits were somewhat dampened when, on closer examination of my itinerary, I realised my charter flight departed from Luton Airport at 4 o'clock in the morning.
10 new phrases.
Jermaine Greer.
Beer.
Al Pacino.
Cappuccino.
Ken Loach.
Brooch.
Kate Adie.
Lady.
Prince Nassim.
Wrinkle cream.
Benjamin Britten.
Kitten.
Seamus Heaney.
Bikini.
Stephen Hawking.
Talking.
William Blake.
Cake.
Brad Pitt.
Brit.
As it was, the airport was practically deserted, save for my travelling companions, 40 schoolchildren from somewhere very north and remote, and 6 cello players from the Royal Academy of Music, who drank and laughed a lot. Far too much, in my opinion, for them to be worthy bearers of the traditions of their noble instrument, and I shall say so, should they ever perform in a concert which I am reviewing. I made a surreptitious note of their names from the flight list. In Weimar, we stayed at the Ostrich Hotel, which has been an inn since the 16th century. In the early 60s, it was completely refurbished by the East German Tourist Bureau in a functional mock Bauhaus style, and still retains many of the charming features of the Eastern Bloc period. Owing to one of these, a malfunctioning door handle, I was trapped in my room for 24 hours.
Youth Matters. In our continuing quest to appeal to younger people, the Sunday format welcomes our new lifestyle columnist, Becky Hutchinson, aged 8.
Boys really annoy me. The reason why is that they tell lies on girls because they hate girls. And sometimes they be horrible to girls. Well, Tim bullies girls a lot.
Picture, top left.
He teases me and other girls too.
Seeking counterbalance to my disconcerted state, I availed myself of the minibar, which contained only a large bottle of Apfelkorn, or apple brandy, which was almost full. The room did have a telephone, but this seemed, in a nostalgic gesture to a bygone age, to be directly connected to the local police station where no one spoke English. As my German is fluent, but gleaned exclusively from the libretto of the Ring Cycle, I was unable succinctly to communicate my predicament. Eventually, however, I was rescued when a bewildered local constable arrived to investigate a garbled report that the large hoard of gold and a dragon had been found in Zimmer 25.
10 shops that sell rubber bands.
Ryman's.
W.H. Smith.
Ryman's Dalkeith.
W.H. Smith Manchester.
Ryman's Perth.
Ryman's.
The next evening we were invited to play traditional drinking games with our guides. The most popular, Munzer in der Luft, apparently originated in the porcelain factories of Dresden in the 18th century and involves throwing a coin into the air. If the coin comes down again, the assembled company all have to have another tankard of beer. In Leipzig, we were shown round the exclusively grey and rectangular 60s buildings of the city centre, which our hosts explained, without rancour, had replaced the beautiful medieval city that had been completely destroyed by Allied bombing in 1944. We were shown the car park, where one of Bach's houses had once stood, the ring road, where Tolstoy had once juggled mice for a bet, and a sewage plant, where Goethe once dallied with his mistress when it was a fragrant meadow. All too soon, it was time to board our state-of-the-art touring coach for the all-too-short trip to the airport, where Apfelkorn was on sale for a fraction of the price in my minibar. I noticed that one of the school children, 17 or 18, possessed a beauty that Botticelli would have blinded himself for the privilege of painting.
Bach to the Roots is organised by Beyond the South Circular Travel of Croydon.
Reference points. Health and science.
Worrying could ruin your unborn child's life. Expectant mothers warned.
Women who allow themselves to suffer stress during pregnancy could be contributing to long-term developmental and behavioural problems in their children, suggests research published today. An exhausting four-year study of 100 mothers conducted by Dr. Vivette Petit,
picture top left,
of King's College Hospital in London, has revealed a link between prenatal anxiety and conditions such as hyperactivity and having to go to a comprehensive. It's thought that the damage occurs when the stress hormone, cortisol, emitted by anxious women, crosses the placenta from mother to fetus, leading to a permanent resetting of the unborn child's stress control mechanism, a very delicate function of the brain, located just behind the central heating and hot water timers.
Celebrity surname for a day.
This week, Carol Thatcher learns how to fix a thatched roof in Thetford, Norfolk. Terry Butcher spends a day chopping up raw carcasses, and Lloyd Grossman is.
Dr. Petit Vivette followed her group of mothers and children closely, scrutinising their every move, word and thought with great intensity and for long periods of time, and found that their anxiety levels were far greater than among a control group whom she did not study.
I'm not saying you literally have to spend the entire 9 months lying in bed listening to Bach cantatas,
says Dr. Pipette.
Picture top right.
Although that would be best for the fetus. But there is a lot you can do to avoid the more obviously stressful aspects of life, such as moving house, for instance, or traumatic family events such as bereavement. Work, in particular, is something best cut out altogether during a sensitive time and left to childless women such as myself.
The Essential Kitchen, part 9 of our 10-part series. This week, kitchen therapist India Spago looks at the bin liner.
Let's talk rubbish. For there is no point in building our essential kitchen if we ignore the grim practicalities. The kitchen is the stomach of the home, and waste products are as natural as limestone build-up. Think of waste as a sign of a healthy and productive kitchen, but where to put it? Terence Howarth has been designing bin liners for 12 years. Howarth believes he is carrying on a tradition that goes back to the dawn of civilization, for the bin was probably man's first invention. The first bin was probably no more than a corner in a cave where the cook threw onion peel. It was a pile that defined itself with no need for boundaries. Modern man wants clearer delineation between use and uselessness, between value and indifference. The bin liner is a symbol of that boundary, a chance for our modernity to assert itself. The tie string is perhaps the declaration of our ambivalence about waste, its inevitability, and the way it challenges our idea of ourselves as above nature. We respect it, but also fear it. The bin liner and tie string remind us we are living biological entities, not machines. Always leave some of your bin liner showing between the bin and the lid. Whatever colour you choose, make sure it stands out against the background. White bags are definitely last year's thing. Stick to the classic greens and blacks.
Bags start at 69p for 10. Fortnum's currently doing a 2-for-1. Keep away from small children.
The survey has found favour among those who believe that avoiding the stress of work should continue beyond the pregnancy.
Studies have shown vastly reduced levels of reading ability among the children of working mothers,
says Janet Bailey, a full-time campaigner for the organisation Mothers Shouldn't Work, who has 5 children.
Obviously, these things are hard to measure exactly,
she stresses.
But basically, what's been found is that where a woman returns to work before her child is one, that one-year-old could have a reading age of as little as 6 months. Correspondingly, if the mother stays at home, then by the time the child is 3, it will have a reading age of 5, although its mother will have a reading age of 3.
Upsizing. Everyone's doing it. Meet Alan Picard, who gave up his stress-free life on a Cumbrian cottage for his dream of selling photocopiers over the phone.
This does present problems for children's authors in terms of writing something that mother and child can share. We recommend aiming at an average readership of 4 at this point. Otherwise, either the mother struggles or the child gets bored. Alternatively, the problem can be overcome by having the child read its bedtime story to the mother, although there are safety implications to this, with cases on the rise of children being badly burned while trying to cook a meal for the father after the mother's gone to sleep.
Some experts suggest that women are best off out of the workplace even during the preconceptual phase of their child's life. Given the often unpredictable nature of ovulation and male sexual appetite, the biologically ideal moment to conceive may fall, for example, in the middle of a board meeting at 3 in the afternoon, where you risk offending colleagues and exerting undue pressure on your partner. This can lead to an enormous release of stress at just the wrong moment, literally giving your child the very worst possible start in life.
All the evidence,
says Petite Dr. Vivette,
above right,
points toward the suggestion that women should stop working from the moment they even think about getting pregnant until well into the child's 50th year.
Beyond keeping her away from work, though, what more can be done to prevent a woman from becoming anxious during those crucial 9 months before she goes through the shattering ordeal of labour?
Well, obviously, where a woman's anxiety is very high,
says vivacious Dr. Pipette,
bottom left,
doctors have the option of prescribing the Prozac that would normally be reserved for after the delivery. But in general, I can only repeat the advice that's been handed down to pregnant women for generations. Simply have a cup of tea and put your fetus up.
Advertisement.
More talk is unlike any other phone.
Because more talk is unlike any other phone network.
More talk is utterly unique.
Why?
Because more talk will tell you when your biannual dentist appointment is due.
Which means your time is your own.
Which means your life is your own.
Which means you have the time and the space.
The freedom to live your life.
However you want.
More talk.
Less hassle.
More talk.
It's not just a philosophy.
It's a way of life.
Disclaimer.
We reserve the right to obfuscate our pricing tariffs and or change our pricing tariffs without prior warning, without disclosing the nature or number of those tariffs, and to add penalty tariffs at our discretion without prior warning or subsequent notification.
Offer not open to residents of the UK or territories outside of the UK.
Reference points. Education.
Educating per litre.
Jonathan Blake examines a worrying new trend in schools.
Sarah is 14. She's a normal teenage schoolgirl who enjoys playing netball, buying clothes, and swearing loudly on buses. But Sarah is yet another casualty of a new form of bullying. Where once the make of trainers led to intimidation, choice of hairstyle meant ridicule, or even just accidentally calling a teacher mum resulted in relentless name-calling, now the bullies have selected a new target. Understandably, the Jeep has long been preferred as the preferred vehicle for the school run. It's big, safe, and in the rush hour scares oncoming traffic into giving way. But the four-wheel people carrier is rapidly becoming bully's star prize. I meet Margaret, Sarah's mother, a normal middle-aged Surrey housewife. Clearly showing the strain, Margaret nervously fiddles with her car keys.
Well, we've been taking Sarah and her sister to school for 2 years now in a Deota 2.6 four-wheel drive. 2 litre, not top of the range, but it suits us. 3 weeks ago, Sarah comes home in tears and it's, Mum, I'm being teased, we need to get steel front bull bars. Well, if all the other kids have got them, it's difficult to say no, isn't it?
With this fresh threat to classroom stability so widespread, it was only a matter of time before new insults were bandied around. Four-wheel skid and
sedation unit.
For many people, the perfect evening out is a sedate affair. Yet often we seem to be overlooked by busy pubs, crowded clubs and stadium rock gigs. At last, things have changed. Those of us looking for a sedate night out can now go to the Sedation Unit, a small club off Charing Cross Road, where you can go to be put under sedation. It's a surprisingly relaxing experience.
Chirpy, chirpy, cheep, jeep are the new playground cat calls. Sarah's headmaster, Dr. Graham Whitbread, says everything is being done to combat jeep bullying.
Obviously, it is a problem, but we try to instill into pupils the need to respect every parent's jeep of choice. I mean, I've only got a VW camper.
Picture top left.
But I understand we have four-wheelers of every denomination, and tolerance is essential.
Angus Wilson is on holiday.
The figures speak for themselves. In a recent poll to determine the main ammunition for bullies, having a down-market jeep stood at 14%, just below the more traditional fainting in assembly at 16%. With the perennial favourite being smelly.
Opposite.
Still at 51%.
Sections of the Sunday format are carefully collated at our print centres and newsagents. If any section of your Sunday format is missing, do please let us know and we will try to trace it for you.
In Britain's appalling school-run record, the facts speak for themselves. To and from school, the British child is on average walking an extra 1.7 metres more than his European counterpart due to the sheer volume of jeepage outside school gates. While educationists and Japanese car dealerships argue, it was left to Sarah's mother, Margaret, to describe to me the extent of the vehicular torment her daughter is facing.
Frankly, if things don't get any better, we'll have to think about putting Sarah into a different class altogether. I mean, we could upgrade to the 4-litre Isuzu, which is good value at the moment.
For Margaret and her daughter, time is running out. If our school children are to compete in Europe, this is clearly something that Mr. Blunkett and Martin Phipson, the newly appointed school-run czar, must deal with.
Television. The week ahead, ahead. In full, on television, in brief.
This is My Manor.
Channel 4, Wednesday, 9 o'clock.
The violent drama about East End hoodlums on the make continues. This week, Dobbo, Tweety, Fatboy and Moosey Joe Moose Moose rob a strip club, which unfortunately for them happens to be run by Hatless the Razor and Spoonface Steve, all of which leads to much gratuitous sex, violence and misogyny, it says here.
Love a Duck.
BBC One, Monday, 8:30 to 9.
The docu-soap about the real-life Cockneys who care for sick animals continues. This week, Ron gets in a 2-8 about his Merlins, whatever that means.
Leave It Out.
BBC Two, Tuesday, 7:30.
State of the Art.
Mark Pierce visits the Listen Gallery, Northwest London. In London.
It is less than 6 months to go before the year 2000 finally and resolutely dawns with a pretentiousness that belies the ersatz numeric simplicity of, say, the year 2000 or 1900. With this mathematical rough justice firmly in mind, it was with palpable trepidation that I left the grudging comfort of the open air for the excitable and dangerous cocktail of exhibits that awaited in the Listen Gallery in northwest London. I, and I use that word with a trembling hand, was immediately accosted by an image of myself. Mirrors, video screens, tricks with light. All around me, I was faced with the self. In this case, myself, as art. I was both seer and seen, art and critic, actor and audience, watcher and watched, viewer and viewed, observer and observed. Here and also there.
Has the Blair bubble burst?
Self and other, me and also him, I and also he, myself and also them, caught in a hot cauldron of identities, a familiar baked potato of certainty with a filling of confusion. Would I, or rather they, ever be the same again?